Hi, Elizabeth Heal, now president of the Portland Association of Teachers. Welcome again to KBOO.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me.
This old mole show first interviewed Elizabeth when she taught English at Portland's Madison High School and was one of the many Portland teachers who had developed engaging, participatory, nurturing teaching methods. This progressive version of teaching owes much to the methods of Paulo Freire in his classic book, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. It's one of the many radically reconstructed societal institutions like schools or the workplace, like the workplace and worker co-ops, progressive schools. They demonstrate that another really better world is possible and necessary. Through her 17 years of teaching, she served as a building organizer at Madison and also served on the union board and committees. In 2016, she was elected union vice president, and 2020 became the president-elect. In this country's COVID period, Elizabeth Heal was involved in working with her children's teachers to combine homeschooling with distant learning. She was also leading Portland teachers in, for one, rallying teachers to do the best possible job in often disappointing distance learning, and second, leading the union and Portland teachers with all of the active teachers, and there were many of them. This is not the Elizabeth Heal show, it's the union activist show. In developing with the district administration a good plan for reopening to welcome back students and also to keep the schools safe for teachers, parents, and all the people students live among and with. So, Elizabeth, tell us about your hectic years as union president.
Thanks. Yes. As you said, I was elected president of PAT last spring with my term starting in July, so I've only been president so far during a global pandemic. It has definitely been quite a challenging year, and one of the biggest pieces of this year has been working on an MOU with the district around a safe return to in-person instruction.
MOU is a memorandum of understanding.
Yes, it's a legal agreement that's just for this year, the ongoing pandemic, of how we run our public schools so that they're safe and equitable for our students as well as for educators. And it has been one of our greatest concerns to make sure that when we do bring students into our schools in person during this ongoing pandemic, that our schools are as safe and as equitable as they can be. And for safety, what we're most concerned with is that COVID is not spreading among students and certainly not bringing the virus home to students' families. So we have an agreement that is now ratified and in effect. And some of the biggest pieces of it that we worked very hard to make sure were included in the agreement, one of them is around ventilation. We've known for a long time that COVID is airborne. It's spread through the air. So one of the most important factors has been getting good ventilation and clean air into all of our classrooms. And that's also one of the most expensive. Our school buildings, many of them are 100 years old and have very old and under-maintained ventilation systems. So one thing we were able to get is HEPA air purifiers into every place where educators work with students, including counselors' offices and libraries and definitely all of our classrooms. We also have safety committees that meet in every building and have a checklist that maintain that if the agreed upon pieces are not met, that those spaces will not be used for instruction. And so that's really important that there's ongoing monitoring that our learning spaces are safe. We have in our MOU, 6 feet of social distancing, which is what has been recommended throughout this pandemic to make sure that there is less chance of the virus spreading from person to person. And so our classrooms are all set up now for live instruction with students having at least 6 feet in all directions to minimize person to person spread. And I just want to acknowledge, like, we have all these things in place in order to do everything that we can. I think we have really strong language to mitigate the spread of COVID, but that does not mean that we are not in a pandemic or that there's no risk, right? We are still in a situation where COVID is spreading in our community. And the biggest value of our educators through all of this is to make sure that our schools are a place where students, if we're meeting live, that it's not putting students or students' families at risk. And so we have done everything we can to get the strongest safety measures into our schools.
You know, that sounds very exciting to me. One of the major goals of the labor movement for the last 30, 40 years is to have union safety committees at every job who have the capacity mm-hmm. to shut down the line or in fact go on strike if in fact noise levels, pollution levels, heat levels go beyond a certain limit. Now, they haven't won it, but in fact, in the schools, the Portland Teachers Union apparently has over 100 schools. You have safety committees with real power. That's quite an amazing development, actually, and it bodes well for the union. You have a lot more people involved. Is there anything else you wanted to say on the issue of the reopening?
I think it's important for people to know. One of the factors here is that the governor made an executive order that school districts needed to open all of our elementary, middle, and high school for live in-person instruction in April. And she gave specific dates, ready or not. So it has definitely been a big stress on educators. We were given an arbitrary deadline to have schools ready for students to be in person. And we have worked incredibly hard throughout the pandemic to meet students' needs during these conditions that we would never have chosen. And now that we are opening schools for in-person instruction, we just take it so seriously to make sure that students are safe. And right now, when the governor made that order, the COVID case count in Oregon and Multnomah County was going down. But in the last few weeks, it has gone drastically upward. And so there is a lot of concern that we are not done with this pandemic quite yet. And there are still lots of folks who are not vaccinated. And so we've got to stay vigilant and make sure we get out of this situation all the way before we lower our guards.
Yeah, schools are open now pre-K to 5, and high school's open, I guess, on April 19th, you told me. Hybrid learning, what's the percentage of parents that have decided to send the kid back for hybrid learning?
I don't know that I have an exact number. I know that it's pretty different from school to school. Portland Public Schools has over 90 school sites. You know, we're a big district, and not all schools have a similar breakdown of who's coming back and who is not. And so that's been one of the huge logistical hurdles, is to figure out how to reconfigure all of our schools. Every school is still offering comprehensive distance learning for students who want to continue only remotely, and also offering in-person instruction for students who have chosen that. And some of our schools have the majority of kids who want to be in person for part of the week, and some of the schools have very few students who want that. Every school had to make a plan that works for the choices that families have made.
This is Cable Radio 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, live streamed to the universe. The Old Mole Variety Hour, Bill Resnick here talking to Elizabeth Teal, the president of the Portland Association of Teachers, about the school reopening and the teacher and union effort to do it safely and well. So, Elizabeth, the COVID period and the reopening of schools can be seen as a great experiment, actually, in schooling and educating children. Because over the years, the tech companies and their owners, the boy geniuses, as they've been derisively referred to, they've urged society to reimagine schools for the modern age. That the latest technology, of course, that we buy from them, allows online learning with lessons and interactive lessons on the computer. And these can replace inefficient, money-wasting classrooms, as well as those greedy teachers in many areas. All we really need are people to proctor the high-stakes tests that we offer so we can sort out people. I've given away my biases on that issue. After this period of online teaching, we have a lot more knowledge to evaluate these claims. Tell us, how has computer learning worked out here? And I know you've examined some of the literature from around the country.
Well, a couple of thoughts on that. First of all, during remote learning, teachers have continued to be actually interacting with kids, right? So it's not just plug into an app and do a pre-designed activity. Educators this year have been meeting with their students online and talking to them and interacting with them and designing learning to meet the needs of their actual kids, which is very different than that model of sort of plug them into an app and have the app teach them. And even with that, I think one thing that has been so clear during this whole year of distance learning is there's been a lot of urgency to get students back into live classrooms, because I think it is universally acknowledged that learning through a computer does not provide for all of the needs of a student. We've always known that, but there had been such an outcry and urgency to get students back into the classrooms because of the huge value of having those in-person interactions, getting to work with other people, getting to collaborate in groups and do hands-on learning. And even with the interaction from teachers in the remote learning we've done throughout this year, we know that there is nothing that takes the place of learning that is built on relationships and the specific interests of students.
Yeah, I remember my Mr. Schneller, an English teacher that I had. He was very important to me in my life because he was extremely supportive when I really, really needed it. I think being nurturant and trying to help kids deal with adolescent problems and earlier is really important. One useful impact, though, of distance learning seems to me that the teachers and parents also talk to each other much more. The parents who try to help their kids in the home and urge them to do their homework and all the rest of it, many of the parents also talk to the teachers. Have you found that to be the case, that parents now appreciate the schools much more, appreciate the art and skills and imagination? What have you found with regard to that in this current period?
You know, well, I definitely have heard lots of folks talking this pandemic about getting to see what it takes to go through a school day to keep kids engaged. It is a huge challenge to keep one student engaged in challenging learning activities. And of course, lots of parents across the country have seen what that looks like and what an amazing skill it takes to keep 20 or 30 kids engaged in learning at the same time throughout the day. So I think there's definitely been a lot of opportunities for families to see their kids' education in a way that hasn't been possible before. But I think it's been the case, and it continues to be the case, that, you know, parents tend to be very favorable towards their kids' teachers, even when they're frustrated with the school system, like they may be this year with distance learning. It's not what anyone would have chosen. It's been the safest way to continue to educate students in a global pandemic. But this year, teachers have had to redefine and reinvent their whole practice to figure out how to continue to engage kids and provide meaningful learning in the absence of so many tools that we typically use. And to make that happen, there's been an incredible amount of collaboration and mutual support from teacher to teacher to share what's working and to share materials that you can use through a computer screen and to share activities to keep kids motivated and engaged. Educators have put in an incredible amount of work and creativity to make this work this year.
This is your Old Mole Variety Hour on Cable Radio, 90.7 FM Portland. The Old Mole explores the struggle by working people, the great majority, to create an egalitarian, caring, democratic, sustainable society. I'm Bill Resnick today talking to Elizabeth Teal, new president of the Portland Association of Teachers. 17 years teaching, a union activist, became vice president, now president of the Portland Teachers Union, helping the union navigate this COVID period. We've been talking about the union role and the challenge to reopening the school system. That was forced into distance learning, to say the least, very difficult. But one thing it did teach and to parents was the value of in-person public education. And I'd like to conclude the interview discussing how ongoing efforts by millions of educators to reconstruct schools from the old disciplinary punitive method, which is what I actually grew up in. They had quiet in the classroom. Every kid was engaged, sort of, producing something on paper. It was extremely intolerant of childhood lack of attention and efforts to be friendly and all of the rest of the things, acting out some of their troubles. Extremely intolerant. But teachers through the centuries actually have made ongoing efforts to build a curriculum that just doesn't teach a bunch of facts, but really engages children in democratically organized classrooms, working together, and nurturing classrooms, making an effort to stop the endemic bullying that sometimes happens in schools. And in some schools, they're very supportive of everybody. Kids are clearly capable of sympathy and empathy for others if they see that in the world and they're asked to value that. So what's happened in the last period, particularly in Portland, I recall in 2014, the contract, it was really a path-breaking contract in an extraordinary situation. The school administration basically collapsed when they tried to break the union, and they agreed to all sorts of provisions in the contract, like the free speech provision, which allowed teachers to deviate from the standard rote curriculums that are sort of favored by lots of educators and businessmen, by some educators appointed by businessmen. That model has always been challenged, and the teachers in Portland managed to employ those free speech provision to really enrich their curriculum, work together over the years, in fact, with students. How's that happening? Tell us about it.
Yeah, in our contract, we do have language that protects academic freedom for educators to use materials in addition to the ones mandated by the district so that we have the freedom and the ability to match kids' interests, to make learning meaningful, to talk about current events and bring relevancy to learning at all levels. And that has been crucially important to educators at every grade level, from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade, to make sure that we can make learning meaningful and relevant to our students. And you talked about, you know, the past of education, including, you know, large class sizes and students, a lot of emphasis being put on compliance, right, with students, because when you have a large group of people in a small space, that becomes a primary method of creating order. And I think that method, as a rule for how public schools should operate, has really shown to not be the right model. It is one of the biggest values of educators is to make sure that we're meeting the needs of all of our students, every single one of our students. And we know that more and more in our inequitable society, students come to school with different needs and different levels of needs. So some of the things that we have been advocating for to make sure that we're able to run schools that are based on meeting students' needs and being relevant and meaningful to students, we know we need smaller class sizes. We know students deserve the attention of an adult, and an adult who has enough time and attention to get to know every kid and see every kid for who they are and what their strengths are and what their challenges are, and to be able to bring things into the classroom that specifically support that student. We know that our schools need more counselors. We need more social workers. You know, we need to have relevant clubs and activities at every one of our schools so that every student has things that they're looking forward to within the school day. Every student has adults who can support them with their specific needs, and that every classroom is designed to honor and support who every student is as an individual. And those things are longstanding needs that we've been fighting for in schools, and they're expensive. It costs a lot to add the adults that our kids deserve and to be able to meet all their needs. And so that's why we are always advocating for adequate school funding and stable school funding so that we can put those things in all of our schools and not have to cut them. Frequently in Oregon, we're in a cycle of deciding which programs to cut from our schools, and what our kids deserve is to have those services and activities and programs permanently and stably funded, so that we can guarantee that we're going to meet the needs of our students.
Elizabeth Keel, President of the Portland Association of Teachers, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.